Welcome to the Washington Updates podcast from the National Association of Health Underwriters. Last week on the podcast, we asked the question, to be or not to be, with regards to the market stability bill to be passed before the end of the month. This week, HELP Committee Chairman Lamar Alexander gave us our answer. Due to a lack of bipartisan consensus, it was simply not meant to be. Instead, the Senate appears poised to vote on the latest repeal and replace bill offered by Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy. John Green and Chris Hartman join us for this week's installment to discuss what is happening in the Senate with regards to market stability and this latest repeal attempt. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for joining us. So, a lot has happened in a week, to say the least. So, Murray and Alexander were having hearings and taking testimony, and we thought they were on a glide path to coming up with a bipartisan solution. 2 weeks ago, who would have thought that Graham Cassidy would have any life at all, Chris?
Yeah, so Alexander and Murray were working on a package of market stabilization, but at the same time they were working on it, Senator Graham and Senator Cassidy were working on their repeal and replace. And I think the political motivation and the trade winds and the way the base feels sort of still lends itself towards repeal and replace. And so Alexander Murray, I think, process is dead, but to that extent it could come back. The way we just had Cassidy Graham come back, and, you know, we've talked about it being dead, but like Lazarus, it's now has risen, and Cassidy Graham is back and gaining momentum in the Senate. To remind everyone, the process of reconciliation is the process by you only need 50 votes plus the vice president to pass something in the Senate. And so reconciliation, when we left off at the end of July, had not passed. They were working on what was a skinny repeal at that point, and they still remained one vote short of passing it at that particular point. At that time, Senator Collins of Maine, Murkowski of Alaska, and McCain of Arizona opposed that bill. And then after that amendment failed, the whole bill did not fail. It was just an amendment to it. And so McConnell withdrew the reconciliation package, and Cassidy and Graham have been working since then to bring this process back. They're under a bit of a deadline, so reconciliation, the process available to them only runs through September 30th, and that is because that is the government's fiscal year, and you should have a budget for the new fiscal year come October 1st. And at that time, there's a possibility of starting a new reconciliation process. But Republican leadership has said they want to do that for tax reconciliation and tax reform. So the healthcare one here ends September 30th, and so they're up against a real deadline. And Cassidy Graham have been working to bring their proposal up for a vote. Cassidy Graham's proposal on the funding side basically takes all of the funds that go out either through the Medicaid expansion or the tax credits that individuals get to use in exchange, or the cost share reductions, takes all of that and block grants that money back to the states. So there would be no funds for Medicaid expansion, there would be no funds for tax credits and then cost share reductions and subsidies after the year 2020. And instead, the states will get this money to be able to come up with their own plans and their own systems for covering people with healthcare.
And it could run from single payer to private plans. And the money also included in this bucket, as you know, there are quite a few taxes imposed, the Cadillac tax and the premium tax. The only significant major tax that's being repealed is the device tax. And as you know, NEHU has worked very, very hard since the beginning to either repeal or delay the premium tax and the Cadillac tax. But now we're going to embed them in this block grant to states, which means that it will be virtually impossible to ever repeal them.
Yeah, so like I said, all those fundings, that sources that we're talking about, they're going off to the states. They still keep all the taxes except for the medical device tax in place. So the Republicans sort of codify the HIT tax and the Cadillac tax in place. NEHU will be working hard to still try to see those repealed. We're asking for those to be repealed when Cassidy Graham comes to the floor. We're actually signing on to a letter with several other employer groups asking for those to be repealed or delayed in the process. But those things such as the HIT tax that do add expenses on the policy, or the Cadillac tax that adds a 40% onto each policy looks like at this point will be part of this package in order to take those funds and send them off to the states to come up with their different plans.
Well, it will be interesting just to see how CBO actually treats all of this in terms of score and whether we will be able to get a further delay or a repeal of those taxes, because those are the belts and suspenders that hold up this whole block grant idea.
Yeah, I think the CBO score is one of the interesting pieces here. The Cassidy Graham bill has not been scored yet. The CBO says the only thing they're going to be able to get it done in time, because the request to work on this has been so recent, is they're going to be able to talk about the level of savings. And so one of the rules under reconciliation is you have to produce savings. So presumably Cassidy Graham will produce some savings, but other pieces in here will be missing. For example, what are the coverage rates going to be on insurance in the United States? What are the other estimates of these different programs that Cassidy Graham has in it? What are the implications for them? Those things will be missing when the Senate votes on this.
Let's be clear. This is a punt to the states. So Congress is saying, we can't do it. Tired of talking about it. I mean, after all, Senator Graham said as much. He's tired of getting phone calls in his office, fielding complaints about health care. He thinks that your governor should get those calls. Now, governors are looking at this and finding out that when they read between the lines, that, as Chris said, funding actually stops and is so unstable. Even at that point, HHS secretary can make changes to the formula, because this is a formula bill, and decide, hey, you know what? California single payer needs more money. So we're going to move money out of Florida and shift it to California.
And I think that formula that John's talking about is the real important piece that I think senators will want to know more about. So if money's coming to the states, how will that look versus the money that citizens in those states have got for tax credits, money that have gone for Medicaid, other expansions, programs like that? How does that look? And so some studies have been done by Avalara and outside independent groups, and it seems to be, for the most part, funds tend to shift south to states like Texas and others. States like California, New York, and others will be getting less funds than the accumulative effect of all those programs before. I think some of this is because which states did the Medicaid expansion. So there's a certain amount of, if you did the Medicaid expansion, obviously your state got more funds, so that kind of redistributes this. But it's also, if you look at the tax credits tend to take into account more expensive cost, high cost of living areas. So if your healthcare costs are higher in an area, your health insurance premiums tend to be higher. And since the tax credits are tied to the cost of the health insurance, those areas were getting more funds. This formula doesn't take those sorts of high cost areas into account, or the medical costs in those sorts of areas into account. So certain states will do a little bit better under that formula. I think one of the things that will be interesting is look which senators might vote for this. Will there be funds there for Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who voted no last time on the reconciliation amendments? Would this be enough funds to make her interested this time around?
So states like Alaska and some other mountain states are slated to get a bit more funding. And that's really great until 2026, in which it all disappears. It all goes away. And its states have to be self-sustaining at that point. So they have to think about how far should they expand. But having said that, what program, once benefits are conferred, ever go away?
Yeah, I just think it will be interesting once this program starts going, how you later come up with the funds for it if it all goes away in 2026. I suppose for some members, this is seeming of a way of winding down any healthcare benefits or extending any entitlement to the American public that was extended by the ACA by having it end in 2026. But I do think that sort of opens up a question, how much of a burden is going to be on these states in 2026 that they will 100% have to absorb. The bill does also block grant the Medicaid funds that go to states even prior to the expansion. So we're kind of talking about going beyond what was in the ACA to block grant that to some of the states.
Before we started the podcast, Chris and I were just having a side conversation about how history seems to be repeating itself. So we're going to get a 300 plus page bill that hasn't been scored. And I guess we'll have to pass it before we know what's inside of it. And there's a Cornhusker-like bailout for some states in order to gain their vote. I mean, this is just beyond the pale.
So let's talk a little bit about what those states can do with the funds. So as you know, there's essential health benefits out there. One of the things this bill does is allow states to apply for a waiver for the different essential health benefits. So states could ask to waive different essential health benefits out there. And I think that will be one of the way that states can look at curbing some of the costs out there when that exist on the essential health benefits.
It might be a good time to also segue then now to the waiver authority, because I think that, you know, changes that are made are going to be made through these waivers. And there are two waivers. There's the 1332, which exists in the ACA, that has very strict guardrails in it. But now they're creating a new legal waiver authority that Chris is alluding to, where they can make these changes to the marketplace beyond what is allowed in 1332.
Yeah, so these waivers are the essential health benefits that we all know there. This bill would allow states to waive the different essential health benefits. That's something that it's not clear the actual flexibility happens under the 1332 waivers in the legislation that exists, or the ACA itself, what sort of flexibility you have in it. The second piece, and I think one that will be even more controversial than the essential health benefits, will be pre-existing conditions. And so one of the things the states can also apply for is to waive the pre-existing conditions under current law. One of the things they do have to put in their waiver is stipulates how they would maintain coverage for these individuals. So essentially what you're saying is the waiver, when you say how you maintain, we're saying you can't deny people coverage, but you will be able to change the amount you're charging them. And there are no guardrails currently in the legislation for the amount you're charging or what affordable coverage for this group necessarily means. So they're providing quite a bit of state flexibility. The question is for consumers and our agents and brokers who have to work with individuals and small businesses and others, what will be able to ensure individuals get? This flexibility and these waivers also can be used for areas that John and I have a lot of concerns about, some of these blue states who might want to set up a single-payer system instead. And you, so you could take these funds that are being block-granted to the states, and then you as a state say, I want to create a public option, I want to create a single-payer system in my state with these funds, and the waivers will let me apply for that. I think there's also some concerns with these waivers that we're really putting a lot of power now in the hands of the secretary. And in the hands of the secretary, right now, we know what this particular secretary wants. But if at some point, you know, there's a Senator Elizabeth Warren administration and she has a HHS secretary who has very high standards on what could be in there, a lot of these different state things that states might be experimenting with could also go away. So this idea of applying for waivers to HHS sort of dependent on which secretary you have in office is something that could cause each election to have wild swings in the health insurance market for years to come.
And I think, again, once benefits are conferred, it's difficult to take them away, even in a conservative state. I can just see state legislators really grappling with the politics of pre-X. Are they really going to do that? It's one thing when these things are done in Washington and they're bad enough, but at the state level where constituents are so close to state legislators, I really think that's a tough sell. I just want to say something else about the 1332 waiver in Oklahoma. Those of you in Oklahoma know that Commissioner Dolk wants to create a pathway to tax self-funded plans, employer plans, multi-state employer plans. And if such authority were granted by HHS attorneys, this would open up to all 50 states a pathway to get at additional tax dollars, and not necessarily for healthcare. We are very nervous, as are the employer groups that we've talked to in our coalition, about this possibility and not having any guaranteed guardrails against such activity.
So let me go on a couple of little aspects that are in here also, and these are a couple of things that I think are particularly good. There's more flexibility on HSAs, allowing you to use that for over their counter coverage. And so I think that will be one of the important pieces. The individual mandate penalty goes away here, so there will be no individual mandate penalty taxes. There will also be no employer mandate penalty. Not that the employer mandate itself goes away, but the penalty does. The question is, what's the implication still for things like employer reporting that NAHU's members are so involved and our brokers are so involved in? If there's no penalty, but employers still have to do the reporting, how is that actually going to play out? The bill also does ban funding for Planned Parenthood, which will cause questions by Senator Collins of Maine, and does repeal the tax on the medical device. So those are some other aspects that go on in the bill as it currently out there. So I think everybody's question, where do things go from here? So this bill is supposed to have its first hearing on Monday. And then
only hearing.
First and only hearing in the Senate Finance on Monday. We plan on having, along with some of our coalition partners, questions about the health insurance tax, the Cadillac tax, and several others there for that particular hearing. It'll be interesting to see how it goes and what witnesses that they bring to the room. Are there any witnesses that have real understanding of the insurance market, actuaries, others that understand how things are moving? Or is it going to be more of a political personality sort of circus? The witness list hasn't been presented yet, and we'll be looking closely at that to see sort of what three-ring circus the Senate is bringing into town. But then later that week, the Senate is expected to start the reconciliation process back on the floor again. This is one amendment they bring to the floor. This does open up the possibility of other amendments. I also suspect the Democrats would use that time to offer amendments. So I think there's a lot of possibility of them trying to throw every last thing at this particular bill going forward in the coming days to get past September 30th. And so I think you'll have a lot of twists and turns to go on. I think healthcare has been quite the roller coaster. We seem to be up in a upside down loop at the moment here, but there's a lot left to be done. I think, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, but I also think we'll see some additions and edits to the Cassidy Graham bill before the actual hits the floor. I hope that they're listening to a lot of groups that have put our input and feedback. We're talking to members of Congress quite regularly. AHIP, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and others have registered considerable concern about the way this particular bill is designed. Have we really done anything to stabilize the individual market? Come 2019, if all of the stabilizers go away, if the tax credits go away, why would any carrier continue to offer plans in 2019? I think those are questions that need to be answered. And I think there's a certain level of politics going on here that people feel just motivated to do something that's called repeal and replace. Senator Grassley said there's 10 reasons to oppose this bill, that he can come up with 10 reasons to oppose it. But the main reason to pass it is we've spent the last 7 years campaigning on repeal and replace, and this bill is called repeal and replace. So that's why they feel it needed to vote for it. Senator Roberts used the analogy of, you know, that we are Thelma and Louise headed off a cliff, and the only other car available is Cassidy Graham. So that's why they will be supporting Cassidy Graham. And so I think some of the political realities of the way the last several years have gone are weighing on members of the Senate to vote something, and I think this might be the package there. I think at the same time those political pressures are going on, you've seen AHIP, the American Health Insurance Plans, come out saying they can't support the bill. Blue Cross Blue Shield coming out saying they can't. Kaiser Permanente. Also, groups like the American Hospital Association.
AMA
and others. So I think there'll be a lot going on throughout this weekend and the beginning of next week. NAHU is going to stay very engaged in trying to make sure that we are protecting employers, the employer-based system, but then also trying to bring stability to the individual market and protect the consumers that could be our small business owners and the individuals that our agents or brokers work with. And so we're going to be working nonstop around the clock to see if we can get some changes here.
Next week, when the members return, we'll have a better idea if, in fact, they have the votes to carry this out. Members are back home in their districts and in their states. I think that if you get a chance to see your senator, you should have a conversation.
And I think, you know, if this does not pass and the September 30th reconciliation deadline goes by, I think that is when it is an opportunity to resurrect Alexander and Murray, who is putting together a plan to create more flexibility on the 1332 waivers while still having guardrails up for consumers, that looks at things like the possibility of creating more flexibility in the market for stuff like copper plans, but then also look at providing insurance carriers some predictability and stability by guaranteeing cost sharing reductions for the next couple of years so that carriers can truly price their plans out with knowing what sort of funding requirements will be on them, what the consumer will actually pay, and what sort of assistance to those consumers is coming from the government. As we know, cost sharing reductions are now on a month-to-month basis under this administration, and so they could go away for a carrier at any moment, and I think that makes it very hard for an actuary to sort of predict the value of a plan and price appropriately. But we'll be working hard to see some of those market stabilizers come back, and so I think we're not at the end of this twist and turn. We're still mid-roller coaster ride here, and so to end things on an optimistic note, I do think there are those who see the policy flaws and want to remember about getting back to some sort of stability in the market and getting insurance rates under control, and we'll be working with those people over the next few days to see that happen.
Our thanks to Chris Hartman and John Green for joining us on this week's podcast for the Washington Update from the National Association of Health Underwriters. Thank you for listening.